The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made it to start. 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to our Sunday Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in. Another different and interesting program with a new guest today. I'll introduce our guest in just a minute. A couple of real quick announcements. There will be no Hotel Mars program this week. Mr. Batchelor is traveling, so there won't be a program. So make sure you pay attention to that. And number two, we're using the 60-minute format today. So please note the time if you want to get an email question in or give us a phone call, so you do it before the program ends. And best not to wait until the last minute. Always waiting till the last minute may mean you miss us. So 60-minute format, pay attention to the clock, and we definitely want to hear from you. So our toll-free number for today is 1-866-687-7223. And there are no call screeners, so be patient. Let it ring. We'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. And do note that we hold people over the break, although I do answer the phone during the break. And if there's a break coming up, don't let that stop you from using the toll-free line, which is our preferred way of communicating with our guest. But you can also use email, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then you can also post a comment or a question on our blog, which is our website, thespaceshow.com. All the way over to the far right is the upcoming show menu. We're the first program listed. Open that up. That's also our blog page for this show. And then scroll all the way to the bottom for comments. And as soon as you post a question or a comment, we'll get it and we can bring it up on air. You do not need to be subscribed or logged in to Discuss, which is our comment program on our blog. You can do so as a guest. So don't let that stop you from posting a comment or a question for our guest. And our website, again, is thespaceshow.com. So the updated weekly newsletter will be posted to the website after today's program, and it has all of the programs for the coming week listed in some detail. And if you scroll down, it also has the programs that are booked and confirmed throughout the balance of the year. So we still have a few dates left in November, and we have some December dates left. If you have anyone that you would like to suggest for us being a guest on the program, please send me the information, and I will be happy to follow up on that. Remember that everything we do is archived. You can listen right off of our website or easily download our shows, and you can also go to the store, which is in the upper left menu. Look under support. So this is the gift-giving season, or at least it's about to start. So you might find some stocking stuffer gifts or some ideas for your favorite Space Show listener or Space Cadet there. And, of course, your feedback and suggestions are always welcome. Also in that upper menu, there's a Listen Live button, and this tells you how to listen to live shows, the compressed MP3 archives off of our website, as well as our podcasting, including Alexa. And if you have any questions about any of this, please don't hesitate to email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. The most important buttons to me on our website, and so I do want to call this to your attention, have to do with fundraising. We are getting ready to start our annual campaign. The Space Show is a listener-financed program, so without your support, we can't do these programs. And your support really is needed. You hear me say this all the time, but I don't exaggerate. We are a 501c3 nonprofit with one, onegiantleapfoundation.org. If you pay U.S. federal taxes, you get a tax deduction for a gift. If you pay California taxes, you also get a tax deduction here in California as a public benefit corporation. Our parent is onegiantleapfoundation.org, so check it out. And if you have any questions about contributing or donating, please let me hear from you. On our website, you'll see the Support the Space Show button, so that's information on how to support us using PayPal or sending in a check if you don't want to do it electronically. Also, Amazon has two great ways to support nonprofits, and we're a registered nonprofit with Amazon. So if you click on the big Amazon button in the near center of our homepage, it will take you to the page that explains the two One Giant Leap Foundation Amazon programs. And we certainly appreciate your support, but we also do need it, and we thank you very much for your support. Again, it is listener-supported, so if you like our guests, you like interacting with them, the blog, all of what we do, making guest suggestions, please support us. And don't just rely on everybody else to do that so that you can hear the programs for free. Help us keep it all going, okay? One other thing, we have started our new revised One Giant Leap Foundation Space Show Advisory Board. And the rules for it, because it's this time it's going to be an active board, I want to hear from people, and I want people who listen to the show and who are participatory with us with the show. So it's unlike what we had before. But the advisory board is listed at onegiantleapfoundation.org. And then over on the left-hand menu, there's the team, and the advisory board is listed under team. So right now you'll see the rules and the parameters for the new advisory board, and if you're interested, we definitely want to hear from you. So that brings me to one other thing. We do have sponsors, and we're getting ready to open up sponsorships for 2019. We don't take that many because we read sponsor messages on the air on full-length show, and that does eat into talk time a little bit. On the shorter shows, like today, we only thank our sponsors. So sponsors do get the banner ad running across the website, and you can change that banner ad as much as you want. And we are appreciative of our sponsors, Northrop Grumman, AIAA, Celestis, the Space Development Network, the National Space Society, the Integrated Space Group with the Space Plan, and, of course, the Space Foundation. If you're interested in sponsoring us for 2019, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I'll be happy to provide you with all the information that you request. So I'm happy to introduce everybody to Doug Forrest, and he is a space artist. He was referred to me by our friend Michelle Evans of X-15 fame and Neil Armstrong fame on the Space Show. He is from Scotland, and he grew up, like so many of us listening to the show, watching Apollo astronauts walk around, dance around, play around on the moon. And he's been fascinated and hooked ever since, which, of course, happened to most of our listeners, even the younger listeners who maybe watched it on computer rather than being able to see the real thing as it took place. He eventually made his way from Scotland to London, and he worked as a visual effects cameraman in the movie industry. And then eventually movie cameras sort of got swapped out for computers, and he went to Los Angeles, and he worked as a visual effects compositor, and he is in the L.A. area at this time. As an artist, he says he's interested in the human side of early space missions and the geometry of the machines and the equipment. He likes the engineering behind launch towers, spacesuits, rocket engines. Who doesn't? But he does something with it, as you will hear during our program today. And he sees them as a piece of art himself. He's a member of many different national and international space organizations. Excuse me. He's written op-ed letters to accomplish purposes with space, which he can tell you about and that are in his bio. And through his art, he wants to help preserve what he considers to be the most amazing chapter of human exploration, ingenuity, and achievement. So he does have websites that you should visit, and I would suggest you have it opened. It may drive you to ask him some questions during today's program. Go to apollo-arts.com, and you can read Doug's full bio on our website. It is uploaded and posted. It's also listed on the website that I just gave you. Welcome to the Space Show, Doug. How are you today?
I'm great, David. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk to you. So, Apollo astronauts walking on the moon hooked you for life, I take it. Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, I was pretty young when it happened, of course, but I was really into it as a kid. I'd be out in the garden in my spacesuits while they were basically walking on the moon. I mean, we were glued to the TV every time it was on. It was great fun. So it's been something that I've always been really fascinated by, but the art thing came along much later.
Well, maybe we'll get back to walking on the moon, and you can see that through the eyes of, as you just said, the art thing. So that would probably be even better, right?
Uh-huh.
How did you decide or what made you see art in space and go down a path of art and space rather than engineering? You're attracted to engineering, for example. I talked to a lot of aerospace engineers, and they got hooked the same way you did, and then they went out and studied engineering so they could tinker with the stuff and build the stuff. But you went down the art road. How did that happen?
I think because, I mean, I've been basically drawing is my favorite medium. I've been drawing since I could hold a pencil. And, I mean, at school, academically, I wasn't a big fan of the academics, but I always enjoyed the art side of it. And I was, you know, relatively, I was good at it compared to a lot of the kids. And it was just something that I just liked to do. I'm very visual minded. So I found that it was an easier path for me to, it was really a no-brainer. It was just something I liked to do in my spare time when I wasn't in school. And back in the day, I would be home drawing usually. And so that was really how that came about. And the movie side is kind of an extension of that in a way. I was always fascinated by the movies, and the special effects, visual effects are really what I was like, I want to do that. So that's how kind of that came about.
So I'm on your website gallery page, and I'm looking at drawings, right? They're not paintings. They're all drawings, right?
They're all pencil drawings. Yes.
So are they? Do you make copies of the pencil drawings, or all of these? They're all originals, and you only have one of each.
Actually, no. I make all my own prints. I actually don't sell originals at this point. I have some of them actually signed. Those are for me. I made a definite decision before I even started this that I wanted to do that. Primarily because when I was living in London, I was a big Martin Offer or Dire Straits fan. And, you know, the music.
Uh-huh.
And I actually used to do a lot of pictures of them. I got to know the band's manager's secretary. And I used to go visit her sometimes at lunchtime, and she knew that I did these drawings. And I actually ended up doing some pictures for some of the other fans through the information service that she ran for the band. And back in those days, this is before there was any digital or computers or anything at home. And I used to it was all originals. And I got a little tired of spending a long time doing these originals and then sending them off. I wasn't making much money in those days on them. And I got a little tired of that. And then that was when things went digital in my job. And I transitioned over to that. And while I was doing that, I really wasn't doing a lot of the artwork I was so busy trying to learn the digital side of things, and that really took my attention away from doing this. So when I started doing this, I realized that I had the capability at home to be able to do the drawings, to make the best kind of giclée prints that I could do. I mean, I have a very good printer here. And the drawings are quite big as well. They're on average about 17 by 22 inches. And so that was really the plan, was to make these very high-quality prints that I can sell at the shows that I do, such as Space Test, or I've been to ISDC and Space Tech Expo, actually, in Pasadena. We do that one as well.
So when you do these drawings, are you doing them from memory? Are you doing them from a photograph? What is the model you use for the drawings? Because the detail is incredible.
Oh, for most of them, I am using photographic reference for sure. I'm not that good. I can't do them from memory. But I have quite a large collection of photographs that I've collected, especially for this. Sometimes I'll mix and match images to create something, but most of them are created from photographs. The only one really that's completely original, if you look down, is one called Green Rock Rock and Rover.
That
one was actually done based on a conversation I had with the Apollo 15's commander, Dave Scott, at Space Test a couple of years ago. And he told me the story of this whole episode that they had on the moon when there was no TV available at this time, because they couldn't get a link to Earth. And he gave me this whole story, and he very strongly suggested that it would be great if I could do something, because I'd already shown him some of the pictures I had already done, including a portrait that I'd done of him, which is not on the website. And he was quite keen on me doing something. So I kind of came away with, yeah, I'm definitely going to do something. And that was what I did. But that's not based on photographs. That's just done. I did get help with the rover, with a gentleman called Don McMillan, who has made this incredible, computer generated model of the rover. And, he helped me with that. He gave me a lot of help, actually, in the research for that.
So but it's still a print that you're selling, right?
Correct.
You're not selling the original here. What does it mean when this one says I apologize for my ignorance. Glissée print, archival quality ink. So that's a different kind of paper and different kind of ink.
Yes, it's a high quality fine art paper. I use a couple of different kinds of paper, but they're a very heavy stock.
Uh-huh.
About I think at least 100-pound stock, and the archival ink. The printer I use uses matte inks as opposed to glossy like you would for printing photographs.
Uh huh.
And I mean, the ink, they say it's archival and it will last a long, long time. I mean, you can't, like anything, you can't put them in direct sunlight, but, or you shouldn't, but
you shouldn't. Uh-huh.
They will last a long time.
Do you have other prints other than what's on the website? Like, do you publish a catalog or something like that?
At this time, no. I'm still building on it. I've only been doing this for about 3 years now. As far as the Apollo Arts goes, the other stuff as I'd done before, as I said, I was kind of doing originals and selling them, and that was it. I'd maybe take a picture of it, but that was it. I didn't have a digital version of it.
So in terms of what people might want to buy, there's 14 prints on your website that are available for sale. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And with more coming, and there's more in the works.
There's more in the works. In that Green Rover, what is the object? Is that a rock with an astronaut behind it over on the left?
Yeah, so what happened on the second EVA on Apollo 15, they were this was actually an unscheduled stop where they noticed this this large boulder, and they were originally driving above it on the slope. Dave told me the slope was about 18 degrees, but it was very, very, very soft and powdery on the soil, so it made it a little treacherous. And they stopped to have a look at this this rock. They were going to go sample it when they were parked above it. But they were going backwards and forwards with Mission Control on not being too sure that they could actually, if they got down to it, would they be able to get back up in the bulky spacesuits. So what was decided is that Dave would back the rover up and then drive it down below the rover while Jim walked down to the rover. That's to the boulder, sorry.
To the boulder,
And but Jim actually discovered that the boulder had green. It looked green to him, and they weren't expecting that. And Apollo 15, of course, was a real geology mission. They were really focused on the geology. So when they saw that it was green, they weren't actually sure until they got it back. But they, because they weren't sure if the visors were tinting it or what, but they said, yeah, it really does look green. But they did find that it actually was green. It had green glass spheres in it, which were caused when the Umbrian Basin was formed on the moon. And it was, they said, what was a high abundance of magnesium oxide in the rock that made it look green. And so anyway, while they were doing that, though, if you look at the picture, you can see that one of the rover wheels is actually off the ground. And this is accurate. It was actually slipping down the slope. So what Jim offered to kneel down and hold onto it, because in 1/6 gravity, it was pretty light, while that's Dave Scott up behind the rock. And he did take a couple of pictures across the rock, which you can see in the picture next to it, the high point, because that's actually a 180-degree point of view difference of the same moment, where Dave is he's actually sampling and taking pictures of the boulder. And I just thought it was such a great story, because I hadn't heard it, because I hadn't seen it since there was no TV. But you can read all about it on the Apollo Lunar Surface Journal, which is online, which is actually where I did most of the research for this. And I was actually very keen to get it as accurate as I could in so far as the landscape and the environment around them.
You have another drawing, I think it's number 10 of 14, where the astronaut looks like he's reading something in a reclining chair with a happy smiley face above him. So,
Charlie Jig.
So how did that happen? I'm assuming the smiley face was not really in the space capsule, right?
Oh, no, they're not in the capsule. This is actually in the suit-up room before they go out to the rocket.
Oh, okay.
They've just got suited up, and what he's doing, he's reclining back, pre-breathing the pure oxygen, because they had to remove the nitrogen out of their bloodstream, or they would get the bends when they launch, essentially.
So they're pre-breathing in this room, okay?
Correct.
Okay.
So, yeah, and some one of the technicians with a sense of humor put this poster up above him, and I just thought it was a great picture, so I decided to draw it. And Charlie liked it when I showed him it. He actually has a copy of that now himself. I just thought it was a great picture, and he looks so relaxed, and yet he's about to go on this, you know, off to the moon.
And obviously, 9 is they're picked up in the sea. Which Apollo was this?
Oh, that was Apollo 17. So that was this one actually was the very first one I did in this series, and the story behind this one is it was taken actually by a friend of mine, Alan Bueller. He was one of the frogmen that jumped out of the helicopter, put the flotation tower around the capsule, and he was one of the first three guys to greet the astronauts back to Earth. And I actually saw a very small print of this on the USS Hornet Museum. in Alameda. They have a section below the hangar deck for some of the ships that don't exist anymore that have been scrapped. And the Ticonderoga, which was the one that they used to, the main ship for the Apollo 17 recovery. And I saw this picture when I was there with my family one time, and I realized, my God, Alan must have taken that, because I knew from talking to him that he had been responsible for the photography from the water level. And I just love this picture because, you know, Gene's turning around after being shouted at him, giving him the thumbs up. And I thought, yeah, really, apart from the ship, everything's there. Three astronauts, capsule, one of the frogmen, you know, in the helicopter. I just thought it was a great picture. So I drew it for him for Christmas one year. And that was great. And I got to ask him about it, you know. I said, because I it was kind of a surprise when I drew it for him. And I wasn't doing the Apollo Arts thing at that time. But it was that was a great experience, because I got to talk to him, or I met him actually through eBay, because the wets that they wore on that mission were kind of unique. They had like red and white and blue stripes on them, and the mission patches and stuff. So it wasn't something the SEALs would normally be wearing. And he sold it on eBay through a third party company, and I approached that company after the sale. I didn't get the wetsuit, but I did approach them, and I told them that I was very interested in Apollo and I'd love to talk to this guy, and would they pass on my email? And he responded after about 4 days, and he actually invited me to come to his house in Colorado Springs, which I thought was amazing, since I didn't know him and he didn't know me. But I did. I spent a weekend with him and his wife, and it was just great. We just really hit it off. And unfortunately, Alan passed away 5 years ago, but I'm still friends with his family. And he was a lovely guy. He was just great.
Todd is in San Diego with an email for you. Do you have drawings of Mercury, Gemini, or the shuttle, or maybe even Michelle's X-15?
I have a work in progress of the X-15. I haven't on the others. My focus primarily is Apollo at this point. That's not to say it won't happen, but right now I'm only doing Apollo. I have a picture which I've got mostly done of the X-15 with Joe Engel. And the reason I did that was because I was going to go meet him, and I had him sign it for me. But that's the only one.
He's the last X-15 pilot around.
That's right.
So you need to hurry up on that one.
Yes, I do.
Because he's probably close to 90 years old. I don't know how old he is. Maybe he's a little older than
that. He's a lovely guy as well. I met him at Space Fest, not this one this year, but last year. Uh-huh. And he's great. If you ever get the chance, anyone that's listening, you should go say hello, because he's brilliant. He gives a lot of time to people to talk about stuff.
What about the classics from Buzz and Neil and Raising the Flag or The First Step, or you know, some of the classic photographs from that first moon landing? And have you done any of those images, or will you be?
I have not done any. I am looking, obviously, next year is the 50th anniversary of 11, and I do have some original stuff actually in progress at the moment, which is not based on photographs. And I'm going to be working more towards that stuff rather than, again, I'm trying to move away from just using photographs that are already out there. Most of them, when I started this, I basically was going to be showing at Space Fest, and I had two drawings, and I thought, well, I've got to get a lot more than that. So it was all a bit of a scramble the first year, because these do take quite a long time to do. On average, they're about 40 to 60 hours each. And of course, since I have a job as well, I have to spread out. So they usually take me a few weeks to kind of get completed.
That is a long time, 40 to 6 hours each. Is the detail what takes time? Help us understand the process.
Yeah, the detail and the lighting. The lighting's the big thing. I mean, shading is what takes all the time, really, and blending it. And it's usually, although it's in pencil, I actually tend to shade in layers. I darken. I don't just like press one time very heavily because you kind of go through the paper if you try and make it as dark as that. So what I tend to do is I use like a 9B pencil, which is very soft, and I'll go in and maybe put five layers of that on to get the blacks really as dark as I can. So yeah, it does take a long time. You end up drawing the drawing about four times sometimes, depending on the subject.
Here's a strange question for you. Well, I'm going to ask it. I think it's strange. Maybe you won't think it's strange. Pete is in Denver and says, you know, I would love a bumper sticker version of some of these pictures. Have you ever thought of doing them as stickers or maybe bumper stickers for cars with a saying like Apollo 11 or, you know, first step on the moon or whatever may be appropriate?
I haven't, but that's actually not a bad idea. I tell you what, though, people have asked me about do I do different sizes. And when I was starting to do this, I actually asked a few artist friends that I know who do this for a living about do you produce one size, multiple sizes of the same thing. And pretty much in every case, I was told that it was probably not a good idea at first to do multiple sizes because what you tend to find is people go for the smallest one. And I didn't really want to do that because I like the pictures big personally. I think they have an impact when they're bigger rather than, a 10x8 or whatever. Bumper stickers, I could, but I haven't.
Here's a thought for you. The bumper sticker triggered my mental imagination. You've got 14 so far, right?
Yeah.
Okay. A series, and I don't know what you charge for them, but let's say you charge $150 for them for the series that I'm going to suggest, of a complete set of these on coffee mugs.
Oh,
And people could get a complete set from you or collect them, you know, make it a goal of collecting them for birthdays or whatever. People know that Joe Blow has this collection and wants another one. So, you know, until he collects all 14 or if you keep making more, then obviously the collection goes. So you make a coffee mug kind of collection. You know, like I see decorative plates, and you can get a whole series of, I don't know, different state plates, you know, or something like that.
Sure.
Why? I'd be interested in a coffee mug collection like that.
writing it down as you're giving me
and,
ideas.
And, you know, if you got a corporation or a company with more than a couple of employees and you furnish coffee mugs in the coffee room or the board meeting, how cool is that?
Well, as I say, it's a good idea. These are things, as I say, I've not really considered too much. There are websites that you can do that, though. You can send your artwork to, and they will create it. So let's just say it's not out of the bounds of impossibility at this point. I will look into that, actually. I may do something like that.
We may have a caller. I'm not sure. Let me see if we have a caller on the phone. No, I think they hung up. So,
okay. So
caller, if you want to get back to us, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, so that toll free number, and please wait because sometimes I don't see the lights flashing, and sometimes we're involved in something, and I don't get to you right away. So please be patient. But it's 1-866-687-7223. Is it possible and this shows probably my ignorance of the art form you're using, can you do this in color and print in color, or is black and white you know, the best medium or the only medium?
I like it in black and white, personally. Let me tell you the story of how I kind of got into doing this for real, where okay. I started doing them more in bulk. In 2014, Space Fest was actually just down the road from me in Pasadena, California. And they normally do it in Tucson, but I'd actually never heard of it before. And I couldn't believe it because it was number six. And when I saw it, it was a posting on Facebook, I think I saw it on. And I'm like, oh, my God, astronauts. I'd never met any of the astronauts before. And when they saw how many of them were actually going, I thought, well, I've got to go to this. And Alan Bean was going to be one of them. And, I knew he was a full-time artist.
Right.
And so at that time, as I said, I only had two drawings. I had the one of the recovery we just talked about. And I had the one of Neil Armstrong, which is up at the top of the gallery. And what I did is I actually made them into T-shirts. And I thought, because nobody knew who I was, so I thought, well, this would be a little talking point, maybe an icebreaker. And I especially wanted to show Alan Bean. And so ultimately, of course, I did. I got to go say hello. And we didn't talk about space. We didn't talk about Apollo at all. We talked about art, mostly about his. But he asked me, he said, do you do anything? And I said, yes. And I kind of pointed to my chest. And I said, I've got this drawing on my shirt. And he said, I thought that was a photograph. And it was the one of Neil. And he kind of leaned over the desk and had a real good look. And Alan was always really great. He always took the time to really talk to people. And, he said to me, he said, you should be doing this. You should have a booth at this show. And I'd already looked around and there was quite a few pretty well-known artists there. And I'm thinking, no, nobody knows who I am. And he said, no, really, you should be doing this. And he got quite serious about it. And I said, well, I'll certainly think about it. And so I went away from the show and I kind of thought about it for about 6 months. And eventually I wrote back to the organizers, Nova Space. And they wrote back and said, yeah, we remember you because of the T-shirts. So it was really a good decision on my part to do that because it did kind of make memories for people. And so I decided, well, I asked them, can I do the next show? And they said, absolutely. So that was when I had to scramble in about 6 months to get, I think I did about five or six drawings in that time. And it was a scramble because I, you know, basically was coming with no research, nothing. And I ended up being one of the highest sellers at the show. And so it was, and it was great. It was a great experience. I mean, you know, money aside, it was wonderful. And Space Fest is, if people have wondered about it, it's just a wonderful event. And you get to meet your heroes and, you get to meet a lot of really cool people, not just the astronauts, but everybody that goes gets to know each other very quickly, and it's just a brilliant weekend. So I did it from that, and it was really Alan Bean was really a major contributor to me doing it.
And we just lost him. You're most fortunate that you got to meet him and talk with him and everything.
Oh, absolutely. We actually, a bunch of, because I'm in the International Association of Astronomical Artists, and we were doing a show for the National Space Society, the ISDC show in May, and that was where we heard that he'd passed away.
I was lucky to have him as a guest on the space show years ago when the show was relatively starting out. I remember when I called him, he actually returned my phone call. He didn't know who I was from anything. I'm sure he had never heard of the space show. It was only about 5 years old or 6 years old at the time. And he said, yeah, I'd be... And he actually called me and when I was teaching in North Dakota, and I answered the phone between classes. And he said, this is Alan Bean. And, you know, first I thought it was a joke. And then I figured, who the hell's going to joke about Alan Bean? I mean, most people in the universe don't even know who he is, probably. So he said he'd love to come on the show on one condition. And I said, what's the condition? He said, I want to talk about my art. And I said, Alan, that's why I'm asking you to be a guest on the space show. You know, not just the fact that you were on the moon, but also the incredible art that you have done about and based upon your experiences. Couldn't have been nicer. And
absolutely.
Really, we lost a great one in my opinion. So.
Oh, he was wonderful. Everybody just loved him. He was always at Space Fest. He was always the first in the hall to sit down for the autographs, and he was always the last to leave.
And he did.
He always had a line of people, and he always took time with everyone.
And he didn't. Right. I bet he didn't charge for his autograph, did he?
Oh, he did. Yeah.
Oh, he did.
They all charge for the autograph.
They did.
I mean, you know, it's a business for Nova Space as well. So of course, yeah. But I don't have any problem with that.
I've got an email from Yvonne in Seattle, and she wants me to give out your website address again, so you can give it out instead of me. But you also listed another website in your email. Is that Applicable Photocopy, or what's the name of the other website?
Oh, Photo Replicate.
Yeah, Photo Replicate. Do we want to talk about that too?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, give Yvonne your email address, your website address again.
Sure, Yvonne. It's www.apollo-arts.com, and that's arts, A-R-T-S.
With S for Sam,
yeah.
On it. Okay.
Exactly, but you have to put the dash in between Apollo and Arts, because you get something very different if you put just Apollo Arts.
Okay, and the other one is called photoreplica.com.
Yeah, Photo Replicate. Back in 2009, I stopped working. I used to work for Sony. I worked there for 13 years, and they were kind of clearing house and doing whatever. But I was out of work for quite a long time with just the odd freelance gig that I could get. And so in that time, I kind of set this up as a photo scanning business that I was doing. I don't tend to do too much of it now, but I can if people come to me. But I was digitizing complete collections of people's like slides or old negatives. And I have a very, very high quality scanner. I have quite a lot of equipment now. This is one of the things I've kind of done, is I've outfitted myself with the capability, because I had a lot of film photographs. And actually the reason that came about was because my parents, before I was born, my dad was a civil engineer, and they lived in Africa for a few years. He was working over there for I think 3.5-4 years, and when we were growing up, we would always hear about these great photographs that they took, but we never saw them. They had slides, boxes and boxes of slides. And so when I was out here in LA and I bought this scanner, it occurred to me that, oh, I should have them bring the pictures to me the next time they come, and then I'll digitize them all. And I did. I took boxes and boxes, and I ended up putting it on two DVDs, which you can play on the TV. And that kind of started a little kind of, a light went off in the head, and it's like, oh, this might be something to do. Wasn't quite the greatest idea that I thought it was going to be, but but I did have some people actually come through, and everybody seemed to be very happy with what it did, because the scanner, it can take a slide, you know, a 35mm slide, and it can produce a 4,000 DPI scan, which you can make a poster, a huge poster out of, without losing any quality. It's very impressive. I leave it up there for people. If they want to send stuff in, I can do it.
And then you charge for it, obviously, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's the website has no prices, because, as I say, it's been kind of not really doing anything for a while. I just leave it up there. But I don't charge a whole lot for it.
Can you scan 4x6 prints or only slides?
Oh, I can do prints. I can actually do several formats. I can do that. I can do odd negative sizes as well that are not 35. I can do 70mm. I've even done 110, which is more like 16mm. Yeah, I can do a lot of stuff.
I've got all my 4x6 prints of my kids when they were little. I probably got over 2,000 or 3,000 of them. How would you like? I'd love to digitize them all before they fade into obscurity and who the hell knows what else. Although they're packed in deep dark boxes in scrapbooks. You know, I don't want to open them because they will fade. That's a problem with them. So.
Do you have the negatives by any chance?
I have the negatives are, yes, I do, but I don't know. The negatives were never put in order, so it's just a big box of negative strips.
Right.
And not all the negatives did we ever print. So trying to go through and see which print matched real, you know, each negative would probably, you know, be at, we're talking about 25 years here, would probably never happen because this was before digital, and I, you know, would use 2 or 3 rolls of 36 print film a week.
Sure.
You know, I was a crazy photographer. So, but I do have all the pictures, and I don't know. I guess they're going to stay in print format because it's really massive to scan them and probably be way outside of what I could afford. But somebody willing to step up to the plate because they do fade over time, and I have put all my VHS tapes on digital format. I was able to do that one. And they were really badly fading and deteriorating.
Right.
Much worse than the prints are. But
Just understand that you're going to get a much better scan from the negative because the negative has a much better range, dynamic range, than the print does. Prints tend to be very contrasty by comparison, so you can get a lot more detail out of the negative. It's always better to do it from that if you can.
Well, the only thing one could do then is take a, you know, that when I had the film developed, they were like cut into six, a piece of strip, about 6 images per,
that's right,
per strip. So all you could do is print everything on the strips because there'd be no way to try to identify. And they're reversals too, so there's no way to try to identify which print goes to which negative, especially since they were never categorized or kept in order or anything like that.
Right, right.
So,
the scanner to some point can automate some of it. Each six strip feeds in, and it will just kind of work its way through each, and then it'll spit it out, and then it just do the next one. So it's not like you have to do each one individually.
Well, you probably can set the scanner up to only scan negatives that meet a certain type of criteria, right? You know, in terms of quality of lighting or something like that.
Oh, it will scan anything.
No, I was trying to limit it so you know it only selects the best of the best on a strip.
What we could do quickly is actually if using a flatbed, just make a contact. Scan a quick contact, that way you can actually see what the image is very quickly, and then you just kind of select from that. That doesn't take too long to do that.
Well, I'll talk to you offline because I just didn't know what to do with all. I was just going to take them over and have them shredded and destroyed because I didn't see any use for any of this. So I think I still have them. Boy, I hope I didn't shred them when I moved. We'll do this by email and offline. But there's another thing. You wrote a series of op-eds that you became a sort of a political activist, right? A save the cause person.
Well, I wrote one article that it started something. Okay, so the story about this is years ago, while I was here, I was actually looking for reference material to build a launch tower to go with one of my Saturn V rockets. And at that time, there wasn't a whole lot of information out there about the towers. They're very complex, complex structures. And I was in the Los Angeles Central Library one Sunday, and I came across this book with a whole piece about preserving space-related artifacts. Oh.
Are you there?
Is that you? Yes, I'm here.
Okay, yeah, I'm here.
You got the cops outside?
No, I live near a busy street, so I hear sirens 24/7 and a train.
Gotcha.
I'm blessed. No rocket launches, just sirens and a train.
So anyway, what happened is I read this article, and it was about preserving space-related artifacts, and the main one was the last surviving Apollo Saturn V launch tower. There were three of them were built originally, and this one, Lot 1, was the one that had been used for some of the more, if you like, historically significant missions. It launched Apollo 4, which is the first unmanned Saturn V. It launched Apollo 8, first around the moon, Apollo 11, of course, all three manned Skylab flights, and the Apollo-Soyuz test project flight. So there was a lot of history in this flight, in this tower. And back in the day when NASA was changing over to the shuttle program, they wanted to reuse the mobile base for the shuttle, but they were just going to get rid of the towers. Now, the first towers that they took down, numbers 2 and 3, they took the top two-thirds of the towers, and that became the first the fixed service structure at the launch pads, 39A and B. But the last one, which still had the milk stool on it, which they used for launching the Saturn 1B, that sat outside the VAB for a few years after the flight, just kind of slowly deteriorating in the Florida atmosphere. And eventually it was reported in the paper that they were going to scrap it. And two Air Force officers who were at the Cape Canaveral station got wind of this, and they set up a project called the Apollo Society. And Wally Schirra, you know, one of the Mercury 7 astronauts, he got involved with them to try and save this. And they ended up, I believe they took NASA to the Supreme Court and actually sued them because to not scrap it. And it was originally eventually decided that they would take the tower down in pieces while the Apollo Society tried to raise the funds to have it restored as a monument. And so I read this, and it totally fascinated me. But when I found that the tower actually still existed, I thought, oh, well, I need to go see this thing, because that'd be the best reference of all. I wrote to NASA, and they did grant me permission to go and see it, because it was in a secure location behind the in the industrial area at the Cape. And so I did make a trip over there. But while I was there, there was a bunch of people with suits on, with clipboards, also at the boneyard. And, of course, while we were waiting to get let in, I just got talking to them. I said, you know, what are you guys doing? And they said, oh, we're here to do a quote for NASA for sandblasting this thing back to bare metal. And I said, oh, why? Yeah, I mean, timing. I mean, it literally could have gone half an hour and I would have missed them. But I said, well, what are you doing? Why are you sandblasting? Oh, they're going to scrap it. And I was like, wow. Because I found that in the article that I'd read, it had been put on the historical register of historical artifacts. But I guess by this time it was off it, and so they were planning on getting rid of it, because it did take up quite a lot of room. I mean, it's essentially in a field, because it was in several pieces, and each piece was like 50 feet square. It was a big old thing. So anyway, I got to climb all over this, and it kind of really stayed in my mind the whole weekend that I was there, that, boy, I need to kind of try and do something about this. So I ended up, I wrote an article, and I'm a member of the British Interplanetary Society, and their magazine Spaceflight, which is a really good publication. I sent my article to them, and they published it. And I got the center spread, and it was great, and a headline on the cover and everything. And my idea was, because I had no idea how to go about setting up a campaign, but I thought, well, maybe this will bring awareness to it. And the number one comment I got from people was, wow, I didn't know this thing still existed. And it did actually get quite a lot of attention. And there was a group on Yahoo called Luck Group, which is, again, primarily for modelers, people who are interested in this, in the tower especially. And they got hold of it, and actually a bunch of us decided together that we would create a group called Save the Lot. And between us, we kind of ran with it for about 3-4 years. And we did actually in the end come very, very close to saving it. But unfortunately, the EPA got involved in actually ordering NASA to destroy it because they found the lead paint, which had never been sandblasted off it, was leaching into the water table. Now, how they found out, I don't know, but anyway, after 30 years, but whatever. We actually did talk to investors, and we came very, very close to getting the money that we were going to be needing to do this. But unfortunately, it did get scrapped in 2004. But we, in the meantime, I mean, I got to go to Huntsville in Alabama. I got to go to the Cape twice. I got some pretty good access because of it. So for me personally, it was a fantastic journey. You know, it was really fascinating, and I got to meet some really cool people through it. I still regret that we never got it, because the whole point was to make it a monument, but also a learning center. I feel like every level was going to have a learning experience about the program and the people involved, not just the astronauts, but everybody. That was really the plan, because it's big enough, you know, you could do that. And I even talked to the company that built the mock-up Saturn V that stands up in Huntsville, and I asked them, you know, could you give me a quote to do it again? And we got all this paperwork. It was amazing. It was a great experience for me personally, because I'd never been involved in anything like that. But, I mean, at one point, when they did actually start the demolition process, one of the people who was really running the campaign actually talked to Sean O'Keefe and actually got him to stop proceedings on it for a little while. So we did come very close, but unfortunately it didn't happen. But the website SaveTheLot.com is still up, and actually you can go there and you can read the article I wrote. You can read the original one by John London that I read, which is what got me interested in the first place. And there's a whole history of it on there. It's pretty interesting. But it was a great experience for me personally.
Why wouldn't the EPA tell them to, you know, mitigate it and get rid of the lead paint or something? Why force them to destroy it?
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not quite sure. There was a lot of politics. I mean, as I say, the original group, the original group, the Apollo Society, actually had to sue them to get it. And it was a shame, because we kept telling NASA, I think they were worried that we wanted them to pay for it. And we kept telling them, we don't want 1 cent from you, because it's not your job to preserve things. That's not the deal at all. But it's paid for. I mean, the taxpayers have already paid for it. Just give us it. But we do need a space to put it up. And that was the Apollo Society had already, I mean, things had changed by the time we got to it, of course, but the Apollo Society had actually gone through that with them, and they had a space now where the monument is, now near the gate of the visitor center. It was going to be there originally. There were plans and everything, because, and I know this because I got in touch with the two people who ran the Apollo Society or started it, and one of them still had all the legal paperwork and everything, and he sent me it all. It was amazing. I had all this stuff that they had already done the work for. So yeah, it was a big deal, but it's sad that we didn't get it. But the EPA, they got involved. I don't know, somebody told them. They didn't find out on their own. Somebody told them, and the whole point was to get it gone. And I have a feeling it's because NASA was concerned about the liability of it. I don't know that for sure. It's just my thoughts on it. But, you know, we wouldn't have been able to restore it exactly as it was. It would have had to be enclosed in some kind of transparent cover, because you don't want somebody jumping or falling off it. I mean, it was quite a dangerous thing for the people who actually worked on it back in the day. So there would have been a lot of considerations to make it safe for the public. But we had all that as ideas in the plans that we had. We knew we weren't going to be able to just put it up as it used to be.
You have a note from Carol in Seattle. And she says, I'm looking around on your webpage as you're talking, and I'm looking at all the pictures you have, I guess this is from SpaceFest, of meeting with all the astronauts and other space people. Can you tell us a little bit something about this meeting? Is it available to the public? I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, absolutely. SpaceFest. Go to spacefest.info on the web, and you'll see they've already announced the next show is in August next year. And it's going to be huge because next year's, as I say, the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. And, yeah, they post there which astronauts are going to be coming. They won't have a full list now because it gets confirmed almost right up till the show starts. But there's a lot of information. You'll see photographs from the previous shows. Absolutely, it's open to the public. That's the whole point of it. It's not just an autograph show. It's actually a huge art show as well, because Tim Poor, who originally set up SpaceFest, it's his family that run it. He was a very, very good space artist, a very highly regarded space artist. And he originally, I think actually again with Alan Bean's help, I think he was one of the main people that kind of helped get it organized. And he basically enlisted the other astronauts who helped support, and they would come along and they do the signings. I mean, they're there all day. It's a fantastic event. I can't say enough about it.
Is it back in Tucson in August?
Yes, it's in Tucson. Yep.
Okay. I'm familiar with it, but I have yet to go to it. So one of these days.
I wouldn't wait. It's fantastic. I mean, seriously, you never know. I mean, actually, two space tests ago, they were saying that was going to be the last one, but they really weren't sure. And everyone's like, no, it's going to go on. And they are, they're really carrying on. We lost Kim, unfortunately. He passed away. His daughter and, his wife, Sally, they've really stepped up and, are doing a great job with it and, keeping it going. And people come internationally. It's from all over the world. People come to it. It's just a great event, and it's a beautiful resort where it's held.
Well, I'll see about doing it this time in August. There's so many events in August. I've always gone to like Small Sat or something else, but this one would be a lot of fun. I see there's some science fiction people there too, so I guess it reaches out and crosses venues, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's really. For me, it's the highlight of the year. It's a great event, and it really is so much fun.
So, in terms of your gallery, am I right that you will be adding more pictures in the near future, more drawings?
Absolutely. As I do them and finish them, I get them up and put them up there. Unlike the ones that I did, I was talking about earlier, the Green Rock Rock and Rover, that one, High Point, and Sava. They were all done based on the conversation I had with Dave Scott last year. So I hadn't originally posted them because I wanted to surprise them with them at the last Space Fest. And, I got him to come over to the booth and show him. And so that's the only time I've not put them up as soon as I finished them. But yeah, usually they go straight onto the website.
Fabulous. So we'll, keep checking to see, what's coming next, and when you decide to do the coffee mugs and T-shirts and everything else, let me know.
So I will.
I can spread the word. That's probably a big market for you for that. I really think so, but who knows?
Well, that's great. As I say, I was writing them down. I was like, okay, I'll look into that.
Yeah, don't forget the T-shirt market either. So. I don't know how you transfer things to T-shirts, but I guess it could be done in fairly high quality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a T-shirt press at home, which I did for my own. It would have to be better quality than that one, but it was good for one-off.
I have another suggestion from you. Rob is in Tucson, And he says, by the way, I have been to Space Fest. It is fabulous. Glad it's in my hometown. My suggestion would be, if you branch out in your photos, to start thinking about some of the commercial robotic missions and commercial launchers, especially those that are planned for going to the moon. I think that would be very historic and very interesting to have some of the images that you do of the initial commercial lunar rovers.
Yeah, that's true. I've been asked many times about the shuttle program as well, and there is so much stuff. It's just getting the time to do it. As I say, at this point, I've still got a few stories I want to tell on the Apollo side, but that's not to say it will never happen. And thank you for the suggestion. I do appreciate it. It's always good to know what people are looking for.
Do the stories on the Apollo side seem to wane in their interest in the public, or do you find the interest in the public, the appetite for Apollo stories and Apollo information still to be pretty strong?
Well, I mean, the people I'm mostly talking to are as into it as I am. So in that respect, no, they're really, you know, they're up there going, yeah, this is great. Love this. And, you know, people are, especially if I can come up with something that people haven't seen, that really kind of still gets people's attention. But general public, I would say it's definitely waned, unfortunately. But then, you know, it did when it was really going on, too.
Yeah, I did toward the end. I got another question. It's along the same lines. And Alice is in, she says, Greater Los Angeles. And she says, when you get around to it, I also think you could document with your drawings the history of SpaceX rockets. I think that, too, would be really interesting.
That's true, but there's also one consideration for that, and I'm not sure about this. It's something a couple of us in the IEEE have talked about, how it goes with licensing, because they may have a problem. When you draw NASA things, NASA's government, it's a totally different deal.
Yes,
with a private company, there might actually be licensing issues that would have to be taken into account, and that's certainly something I don't really have time to even deal with at this point.
Even if you drew your own picture of a Falcon 9, there would be a licensing issue.
I don't know. That's the point. I don't know. I haven't done the research on it because I'm not at that point. But there could be. I don't know.
Because a lot of private people take pictures of them at the launches, and I can't imagine that SpaceX has any control on that. If you went down and took your own pictures of a Falcon Heavy launch, for example, to then draw images from. But I don't know enough about the licensing regulations either.
So. Now, that's true. If you do it from your own pictures, I don't think there's a problem. And that is very true.
Well, unless you go to
one of their launches.
Well, unless you go to sell them, and that's maybe that triggers a licensing issue if you intend to make commercial value out of the image. Maybe
sure.
that's different. I don't know. You have another email. This is from Tony in Los Angeles, not too far from you. You know where the Griffith Observatory is?
Yes.
Well, Tony's part of the Griffith Observatory. That doesn't mean he's embedded into the structure, but he's, you know, like the Philadelphia experiment, but he is part of the entourage with the Griffith. I'm listening, and I'm putting handrails on my 1 to 200 scale model of a launch utility tower made possible largely by documents on the Save the LUT site. Please thank your guest and forward him the picture. Part of the LUT is preserved in the Saturn V exhibit at KSC. And then he sent me a picture, which I can forward to you. Let me see the picture. Of course, it's upside down, but yeah, very cool.
That's great.
Here, I'll
that's really good.
I'll forward his entire note with the picture to it. And
thank you.
I'm sure Tony's fine with doing that. So I've been to the museum at KSC, but I don't remember seeing that. So you know, maybe I was there before, or maybe I don't know. Maybe I just missed it.
It's in the Saturn V center. And actually, there's a kind of funny story about that, because when we were doing the Save the Lat, I actually wrote to them. And I asked them, you know, if we get this, will you give those two bits back? And they told us no. And they weren't prepared to do that, because I guess they would have had to remove the wall in order to take it out. But the funny thing about that is they tout it as being the top two levels, because they have that. They actually have the hammerhead crane on top of it in their exhibit as well. So, but what they did is they actually missed a level. They took two pieces out of the boneyard. One is the top with the crane, but they welded it onto the crew access arm, which was one or two levels down. So it's not quite as accurate as they say it is, but I wrote to the Smithsonian when we were doing this, and they told us that was basically as far as it was going to be preserved. They felt that told the story enough. Those two levels. So, and it is nice to see.
I've been in the Saturn V room there, where it's laying on its side. I mean, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember that. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to go back there someday, and I can look for that. What have we not yet talked about that you believe we should talk about, or have omitted, or have forgotten about?
Oof.
Or that or that you wanted us to know about your work and what you do.
You mean my work or my artwork?
Well, everything. What is your day job, so to speak?
I'm a visual effects compositor. Unfortunately, I'm not actually allowed to tell you what I do. not in the nuts and bolts side of it. I'm a compositor, though. It's all post production, digital.
Okay.
And I think of it like a fancy Photoshop. That's kind of the way I think I tell people. It's like a fancy Photoshop, except it's moving images. You can put things in, you can take things out, you can do all sorts of things with it.
And you do this for today's movie industry?
Actually, I'm working on, it's all on TV shows I'm working on now, all episodic work. So it's a very high turnover of work that we do per week, and it's very busy.
Are you able to tell us some of the shows you work on, or you're not able to do that?
I can do that. Right now, I am working on. Let me see. I'm working on Grey's Anatomy. I work on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., The Good Doctor, Star. Designated Survivor, I mean, Ballers. We do a lot of shows, and I've been lucky in that I've been able to work on quite a few of those since the beginning. I'm quite heavily involved in them.
Interesting. And then, so many people think, of course, the space program is a figment of putting all these digital effects together, but. I guess that technology wasn't around back then, was it?
Well, I can promise you, even today, we couldn't fake it properly. I mean, it's just not possible. you just can't do it.
Even with all of the bandwidth and the technology and the high-quality resolution and everything, you don't think you could fake a realistic moon landing?
Not to make it completely realistic, no, because you're dealing with certain aspects of physics, you know, the lower gravity and all this kind of stuff that you just can't fake, not easily.
But they do zero gravity movies, you know, and stuff, you know, where they're all floating around, even commercials. So
that's true, but it's just harder on a large scale. I mean, walking around the moon, I mean, if you've seen, I know you talked about First Man and stuff with Michelle. And, I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. But, some of the moon stuff, it looks great, but it looks stylized. I don't know. I've never been there, but I don't think it looks like it really did.
Well, it was stylized. Of course, it was stylized for the movie, obviously.
Exactly.
I mean, so.
And it looked great. I loved it. I thought it was a great film.
Anything else we should have talked about, or that you'd like to point us in the direction of, or make sure we remember until the end of times?
Well, no, I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, check it back to the website. I mean, the stories of each picture, I could give you more on some of those. Let me see. Some of the more interesting ones, the Apollo 8 anniversary is coming up, and I have a picture there, which was based on, the lunar orbiter, reconnaissance orbiter material. And, it's the moment that they took the Earthrise picture. And I did that, actually. I was invited to go to the Eurys Night LA party, at the beginning of the year. And they invited me to go as one of the artists. In fact, I turned out to be the only actually attending artist. They had another artist there, but, his material. But, they told me the theme of the show was Apollo 8. But, the only picture I saw was mine. So I wasn't quite sure why that was. But anyway, that, I did that one for that. And that one actually is going to appear in the Smithsonian's Air and Space magazine in the December-January issue.
Oh, cool.
Along with three of the other IEEE artists, Mark Pastrana, Mark Garlick, and, oh, gosh, I forgot the other person's name. I'm sorry. But, yeah, there's going to be four of us in there. And so, yeah, go get that magazine.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to talking to you again, especially when you have an expansion going on. Let us know, okay?
You bet. That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I hope I meet you at a space fest. I'll look forward to it.
Oh, absolutely. No, do try and come. You won't regret it. It really is a fantastic event. And, oh, and finally, I'd just like to say quickly, thanks to Michelle Evans for making the contact for me. I really appreciate it. I've actually not done anything like this before, so it's been fun.
Yeah, it definitely has been fun, and Michelle is terrific, so I thank her as well, too. Doug, let's stay in touch, and I'll look forward to talking to you some more and seeing more of your artwork, and appreciate what you're doing, and glad you shared it with us on the Space Show today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And listeners, check out our website, newsletter, upcoming show menus for all of our programs starting tomorrow. It's a full week, other than there is no Hotel Mars this week. So special thanks to Doug Forrest for being with us and all of you who sent in emails. And remember, have a great rest of the weekend and keep looking up. Goodbye from Doug, David, and the Space Show.